Rejection is never easy, especially when it comes to the H-1B visa lottery. Fortunately, our friends at Mob Squad have a solution to help you stay in North America, eliminate U.S. work visa issues for good, and continue supporting your current company. Mob Squad can secure work permits and help you and your family move to Canada in just 4 weeks. Get in touch with Mob Squad to learn more at mobsquad.io/blindambition. That's mobsquad.io/blindambition. Hey, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Blind Ambition with Jack Kelly. It's your friend Rick from Blind, and today I'm going to introduce you all to Dan Black. He's the Global Talent Attraction and Acquisition Leader at EY. He's responsible for the firm's recruiting strategy, including sourcing, attracting and hiring people with diverse backgrounds and experiences to lead the highest performing teams to serve their clients. Prior to his current role, Dan was the EY Americas Recruiting Leader and also served as the president and longtime board member of the National Association of Colleges and Employers. Before recruiting, he was a certified public accountant serving clients in the financial services industry. Thanks for coming on the show, Dan.
Thanks so much for having me. Happy to be here.
How does someone go from working in accounting to being the chief recruiter?
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I didn't plan for it, that's for sure, right? So for so many, maybe your younger listeners, everyone's younger than me these days. When I was first starting out in my college career, I thought, I want to study something in college that is practical. In other words, something that would get me out of my parents' house, something I knew would have somewhat of job security or a good chance of landing a job right out of school, and accounting. And I was good at math. And I took one of those tests, like, what would be a good career for you? And I'm trying to game the system, like, oh, I hope it comes out with, like, drummer or, like, you know, FBI agent. No. It's that you should be an accountant based on your company. So anyway, so I started with EY. I was able to get a great offer to work in the financial services office. And the accounting actually was really, it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. And that was a really good thing. So I got in and I found out very quickly that being an accountant, at least in this environment, you know, kind of big four professional services, meant working with all different types of clients, with all different kinds of backgrounds, learning something new every day. I was not locked in some closet somewhere with a green eye shade. So I was loving this career. And then a few years into my accounting career, there was this break in between two of my client assignments. And they said, look, Dan, you've got a few months from the end of this, you know, issuing financial statements to the start of the next one. Keep yourself busy. Because, you know, we know we have your next assignment, but you got a couple months. And the head of recruiting, campus recruiting at the time, who hired me as a student, said, hey, I know you've got a couple of months. Would you like to just come and do some recruiting with us? You've got the disposition for it, was basically what she said. And I said, yeah, that sounds like something fun to do in a couple months. And then I'll go back to, you know, the hard work of auditing financial statements. And those couple of months have now turned into a 26-year career in recruitment, talent acquisition, HR, and I've had a few different roles along the way and different kind of manifestations of that. But at the end of the day, I never planned for a career in HR, but now I would never plan to do it another way. It's been really fulfilling.
What's really interesting, Dan, yourself, and I've seen other people with EY and other management consulting firms that are there 20, 25, 30 years.
Yeah.
So what's behind it? There must be something in the water there that you want to stay there and keep advancing.
I have to say, I kind of, like probably a lot of your listeners are thinking, when I was first coming out, I'm like, there's no way I'm spending a long time at any one company, EY or otherwise. Like, I had all these grandiose plans. Back in my day, it was, well, maybe I'll go and be a banker or a, you know, investment banker, or I'll do be a broker or something like that. Sounded a lot more cool and fun, and you know, and make a few career changes along the way. And then something happens. When you find an organization that consistently, what I call, comes through for you, you tend to just endear yourself to that organization, because I even though I've been in the same place for, it'll be 30 years this summer that I've been with EY, I've had seven distinct, very different roles throughout those 7 years. So it's almost like working at seven different companies, but it has that common thread of I love the culture, I love the people that I'm working with. What I think has been most important, what's kept me around, is really two things. Number one, I feel, and I've seen it play out time and time again for 30 years, that EY really is a meritocracy, right? So it's like, you're not going to be judged based on what you knew coming in, what your degree is, what school you went to, what your parents did, et cetera. You're going to be evaluated, promoted, developed, and supported based on what you yourself bring to the table, your work ethic, your results, your commitment to the firm. And as a first generation student that really couldn't rub two nickels together and never put on a suit before I started working at EY, it's been very refreshing to know, like, hey, it's based on what I do, not you know, who I know or what my background is. So that's been very consistent. I'd say the other thing really that's been very poignant for me is that as I've evolved as a human, EY has evolved along with me, right? So when I first joined, I was like, hey, I'll work 24/7. I want to make a good impression and I want to travel and see the world. And the EY says, we can do that. We can put you to work 24/7, right? Then I got married. It's like, well, now I have this other person in my life that I really want to spend some time with. So I want to make some changes to my schedule. And they said, we can do that. Then I had my two children and I said, you know, I want to be the dad that my dad was for me. And they said, we can do that. And so as I've made some of the adjustments and changes in my own life, it's been, I have to say, a little surprising that a firm our size with 400,000 people, it's evolved with me and appreciated that I'm going to have some different needs as I've, you know, kind of grown and matriculated through my career. And they're like, we can accommodate that, Dan, as long as you're going to keep doing what you're doing, right? Bringing your whole self to work and being, you know, conscious about your work. So those two things, if you can find those in an organization, at least, It's my experience. Hold on with both hands. And hence, 30 years later, I'm still here at EY.
Yeah, that's amazing. Maybe to level set for the audience, is this fair to say that many people, when they hear EY or any other management consulting firm, they usually think accounting, but it's much more, right? I mean, it's audit, it's advisory.
Yeah.
Can maybe you share just so people understand and have a better perspective, you know, not just thinking accounting, which is important, but like all the other things that you offer?
I always tell people, I'm like, accounting, we have an image problem. Like, even when you think about some of the popular shows, you look at Suits and some of these, the accountant is never portrayed as the cool dude, other than the one, the Ben Affleck movie, right? That guy, but he was a bad dude. So like, don't use that. But so many people think of the profession, generally speaking, as just that. It's the financial statements, it's doing taxes, it's kind of locked somewhere crunching numbers. The fact of the matter is that we do so much more than that, even in the part of the profession that is audit and tax or assurance and tax, we call it now, because most of what we need for our people joining our organization and the young people joining us is the ability to understand our clients' business, talk with them, interact with them, you know, help to figure out where they could, you know, minimize risk or maximize profit or anything in between. You know, the blocking and tackling that happens, you know, the accounting, we don't fill out tax returns. The machine fills out the return, then we'll go and do analysis and have conversations about, like, here's where we might have been able to save some, or have you thought about this for planning purposes? And what's really of interest to you maybe is now I hire more non-accountants by a good deal than I do accountants into a big four accounting firm we've traditionally known as. So it's a lot of finance, IT, data and analytics, all of these back economics. So we hire engineers. So there's all kinds of great things that you can do at some of these large kind of multifaceted professional services firms. And that's my job really, is to get out there and tell students, hey, what you might have thought about what this profession was, or what your parents' idea of what this was 20 or 30 years ago, man, it's changed a great deal.
That makes a lot of sense, because I'm going to level with you, Dan.
Yeah, do it.
When I hear EY, I think of, you know, the guys in the suits that travel. They're in some basement somewhere or in this odd end conference room, right? That you're told as an employee, like, don't go anywhere near these guys, that conference room. The door is always shut, right? That's the image. But
yeah.
So, you know, coming in from my perspective, I think, gosh, like, how can anyone stay for so many years in that environment?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it seems like there are some kind of like built-in rotational programs. There's kind of a raise your hand culture in terms of assignments. You're a living example of that.
Oh, yeah.
Can you walk us through how that kind of system works internally?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Happy to. So I have to say, and I don't want to sound like an EY commercial, but at the end of the day, EY figured out very early on that, hey, if we don't help our very best talent, our most talented people, and we hire over 100,000 people a year, every year. So we get a lot of talented people coming through the door. If we don't help them to realize their potential and do things that are of interest to them, then they're going to go somewhere else because they can. We train people, we're smart people, we train them up, and they get lots and lots of opportunities to go elsewhere. So we've made it a mission to say, hey, whatever you do, we want your experience here to be exceptional. How do we make that happen in practical terms? Now, there's always a part of our job, Rick. Like, don't be fooled. I get 200 email. I don't love doing 200 sure. email a day. You know, like, so there's parts of our jobs that are a little bit more grueling and grinding than others. We make sure that every conversation that you have with a counselor, a supervisor, et cetera, will be somewhat focused on a performance and things that need to get done, but also has an element of, what is it that you would like to do more of? What are the things that you'd like to learn more about? What are the other things that you'd like to do to round out your experience here and you as a professional? And I think where some people get caught in, like, oh, well, how does this really work, is it's not always about, hey, I want to move into a whole new country or completely different part of the business. It can be something simple as, you know, I'm working on a lot of big banks and financial services. I'd love to work on something smaller and more entrepreneurial, or I'd like to work in the entertainment industry. And the fact that we're such a large organization with so many clients, big and small, public and private, across all sectors, that in and of itself provide the opportunity for our people to have a wide variety of experience. You know, there's going to be pieces of the job. It's like, you know, the audit is a great example. You know, we have a commitment. We have a duty to the public to go in and be that person behind those locked doors at our clients, making sure that the financials are right. But we also have, you know, huge pieces of our business that help to advise our clients. That's when people want to come and see us, like, how can we do this better? How can we save costs? How can we be faster? How can we adopt AI at a quicker rate, but do it responsibly? And that's kind of the fun stuff that people don't automatically associate with us, to your earlier point.
Yes.
I don't, even if you have kind of the greatest job in the world, defined in your mind, however that is, even the greatest job in the world, if it's done the same way or in a similar way, day after day, week after week, year after year, it gets old. I know humans are creatures of habit, but a lot of times we're like, oh, most people like a little change, a little nuance. We tend to hire people that love a good challenge. So, and don't let me look, this is not all like, you know, rainbows and unicorns. It's not like, ooh, I came in, I spent 3 days working on this, and now I want to go and do something over here. Like, it doesn't happen like that overnight, but we're trying to manage a career or help our folks manage their career in such a way that they get meaningful experience, a good variety, but they're also spending enough time in any particular area that they're also building up an expertise or a competency or a skill set that they can then take with them either to another part of EY or outside in the market. And by the way, that's okay. Oh my gosh. We used to ask these questions in the interview, like, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And it's like, you know, if their answer isn't still at your company, then maybe they're not the right person. Nonsense. We are building professionals now. The world, and to the extent we can have them do that EY, great. But if they can go out and be in the world and be entrepreneurs, you know, these are future clients, alumni. We have over 1 million alumni of EY that are out there talking about their experience and putting great stuff in the world. And we're as much proud of them as we are of our current employees. So providing that experience is really, really important.
I love that insight, and I'm going to kind of take advantage of your candor, Dan. So yeah. Allow me.
Sure.
Let's get a sneak peek into what it's like to work at EY, right? Because you mentioned the kind of interview questions, and people may assume EY is all, you know, case interviews or behavioral assessments or even, you know, technical certification assessments.
Yeah.
Because of the industry, you know, what's something unique about EY's job interview or recruitment process that people might not know about?
I think the most important thing to know is that, especially in this day and age, if, you know, everyone's talking about, you know, AI and automation, there's a lot of video, and, you know, the human element of our interview and our evaluation process will never go away. Let me say that again. The human element of our interview and evaluation never go away. At the end of the day, it's much more important for us to understand what you are capable of, what you're not, because people talk about competency. I want to know what capabilities you have. Do you have that growth mindset? So we spend a lot of time digging into that. Now, there are, of course, components of our interview, depending on where you're coming into the firm, Rick, where so if you're going to come in and you say, hey, I want to come in and do blockchain. All right, well, then probably some assessment to see what you know in that space today, whether that's an online assessment or some kind of coding or tech assessment. That will happen if that's a requirement for that particular. Same thing with accounting, right? If in order to sign off in the United States on financial statements, you need CPA. Period. That's not negotiable. So we're going to want to make sure that you have that qualification, et cetera. But the vast majority of what we're doing is trying to find people with those other, those other capabilities. What could you do? So things like, what are your communication skills, and how do you come across when you're dealing with other people, whether they're team members or clients? Adaptability, right? Your job is going to change. Think about what you guys were doing in your own professional careers 5 years ago and what you're doing now. I'm sure there's a lot of nuance and stuff you never would have thought you were doing, right? Emotional intelligence, another one. So we're trying to, our interview process is about trying to get to those things to say, I'm a little bit less concerned about what you actually know how to do today versus what you will be able to learn and do and grow into tomorrow and next year and next decade, right? So we spend a lot of time talking about that.
Are there any do's and don'ts for interviewing that maybe for the audience you could share?
I'm going to make an assumption that your audience is fairly well educated, so I'm going to stay away from the simple, easy stuff. Let me share with you a couple maybe lesser known tricks and tips, potential pitfalls in the interview process. Number one, which is more recent than not, is make sure that you're preparing for that video interview every bit in the same way that you would have for the live interview, right? So you want to have all your stuff together. The fact that you're not in person with someone doesn't mean that you can't be personal with that person on the video. And a lot of companies are using video, at least for the introductory interview. And what does that preparation look like? Get up, get ready, get dressed, get fully dressed, check your tech, get all your stuff nearby. I did an interview. I go out and do like mystery shopper stuff and interview for other jobs to see what's out there. I had all these screens around my camera to make sure I had all my stuff. Separation always a big part of it. But I think some people think, oh, the interview on camera is not as important as live. Every bit is important to show up 110% for that. Showing interest in the company. This is an interesting one that I come across more often than I'd like to admit. So many people are spending the interview saying, hey, what can you do for me as the interviewee? Versus to the extent that you can convince or be convincing to an interviewer like, hey, here's why I want to specifically work at EY. Here's what I know. Here's what I think. Here's why it's appealing to me. That does not come out in as many interviews as you might think. It's mostly people saying, hey, what can you do for me? What is it that you're offering me? And giving an interviewer some insight into why you're interviewed, interested in their company is a really, really big deal. And this one, I love this because I see when it happens and it's fabulous. When an interviewee can make an interviewer talk about her or himself and their place in the organization and their journey and their story, much like the two of you have done with me so far on this podcast, that likability factor. Think about when you meet someone for the first time, someone that doesn't talk much about themselves, but instead shows interest in you. You leave that conversation saying, hey, I like that guy. Meanwhile, you did all the talking. You like them because they showed an interest in you as a human being. And so I think some people see interviewers and the interview process as this stringent process, and it can be nerve-wracking. But the person on the other end of the screen or across the table from you is a human being like everybody else. And if you can make that connection by having them bring to life their story at their company, believe it or not, that's really fair. You're going to fare much better at that because you say, oh, I just like that candidate. Oh, I wonder why. It's because they let me talk about me. So just a few of those nuances, I think, that people to keep in mind can be helpful.
Once they're aboard, what happens then? Do you stay with them and check in on the people that you recruited? Or how does that work?
Yes, the answer is yes. Like at any big corporate organization, there's a handoff process, right? So you come from recruiting, then you go through our onboarding process. You are assigned mentors and peer counselors and all kinds of people to help make sure you're successful. But that bond, particularly at the university level or the early career level, you never forget, especially if you've made a good choice and you're really happy, you never forget who brought you into the firm. So, case in point, I was just at an event last night for one of our alumna who was receiving an award for her alma mater. And at my table, there were 10 people, four of which I had personally hired, had a hand in hiring. Now, of course, I'm like the drill sergeant, right? I brought them in when they were like new. Now they're like managing partner of this and office country partner. But that connection that you make stays with you. So a lot of recruiters, you'll say that they make these connections, stay close. The other thing that's great about that is it helps us as recruiters to stay close to the business. I can't sell EY just being a recruiter and knowing kind of some of the stats and figures. I talk to the people I've hired in the past, say, what's new? What should we be looking more at? What should we be talking about in the market? What's cool about what you're doing day in and day out? That's a helpful part of what we do. One last interesting point on that is a lot of people that are in the business are actively involved in recruitment. So we stay involved because if I'm recruiting Rick to come and work at EY and he wants to be a tax guy, I can tell Rick about tax, or I can have him talk to one of my great tax guys that I hired 10 years ago or 5 years ago to say, hey, Rick, here's a day in and day out. You're going to get much more out of that than you're going to get out of, you know, me just kind of trying to tell you on the overview or the numbers.
In terms of how much selling that you're doing, I imagine a lot of the candidates view EY as like an employer of choice. So they're probably coming to you. Are you dealing mostly with those folks that are coming directly to you, or do you kind of primarily work with like passive talent at the more experienced levels?
That's a really smart question, Rick. Well done, sir. Because the answer is because we're really doing both, and most big companies and recruiting organizations within big companies need to do both. So, I would say the people that are predisposed to a career in either accounting or finance or consulting, then yes, EY's a bit of a household name there. You know, if you're in that headspace, you're aware of us, you know, all the awards we've won and best place to work and all this other stuff. But there's a whole nother group of people that wouldn't naturally think of EY necessarily as a landing place, right? My son is studying mechanical engineering. He goes, I guess I can't work at EY. I'm like, we hire a ton of mechanical engineers. He goes, you do? So there's that selling piece to that ever-growing population that we need to hire more and more of. And yes, a lot of it is in the tech space and innovation, AI, data analytics, et cetera. But we also hire a ton of lawyers. We hire English majors to come in and do on our comms team. So that group, we have to do a lot more active outreach to remind them, hey, we could be a great place to work for you. And here is why, because they're not naturally coming to us. So it's really kind of a bifurcated process where we're going to get people coming to us, which is great. So for them, we need to affirm, hey, good choice. Yeah, we're as good as we're advertised. But there's also another group where it's much more proactive in outreach because they just don't know what they can do. And just a real quick example. So we have on our website right now, you could do it. Any of your listeners can go on to EY.com. And in about 15 different countries, the U.S. being one, you can go and say, I don't even know where I don't even know what EY stands for. And you can either upload a few keywords or your resume if you were so inclined. And in seconds, our candidate assistant, it's an automated piece of our website, would come back and say, here are 6 or 7 jobs that are open right now that you would be a fit for based on what you told us. So now this huge organization with all kinds of different parts and pieces can help the average job seeker who may not know where they fit in EY to at least get a head start on where they might start looking.
Wow, that's amazing. Do you see any other companies that are doing something similar, or is it fairly unique to EY? Because I imagine the kind of brain power or the insight needed to create something like that is fairly specific.
So it is. I think more people are, more companies are doing that, right? You know, so let's talk about AI as a broad umbrella. AI, in my view, is being talked about. It's really a catchphrase for all kinds of technology that can be helpful in the recruiting space, the corporate environment, et cetera. So I'm seeing a lot more companies now offering some kind of either automation or technology assistance, like assistive intelligence. Are there ways that we can help the average job seeker in my line of work to get better, you know, be more focused and more easily find what they're looking for? So more companies are doing that with, you know, chatbots and digital assistants, which is great. But you know, doing it in a way that is meaningful, that is responsible. You know, case in point, I am not using any kind of AI to assess someone's personality, for example. I don't want to do that. But what I do want to do is use technology to say, schedule an interview. I don't want you to have to pick up the phone and heaven forbid and call someone and to figure out a time where we could meet. That should be just like you schedule your doctor, your dentist, your DoorDash, all the D's. More companies are doing that. And it's, look, to the betterment of job seekers. But you make a good point, Rick. Like, doing it well does require time and effort. And when I talk about this candidate assistant, we introduced that thing 3 years ago, 4 years ago, and it's been honing it ever since and helping it learn and be better at what it does. It doesn't just say, hey, here's a good job you might be interested in, Jack. Here's the job you might be interested in. Here's why we think you might be interested. And then you can double click and say, oh, because I said I like this and this job involves it. Oh, okay. It's that constant improvement process, I think, that is important in this new world of AI and tech.
This episode of The Blind Ambition with Jack Kelly is brought to you by BetterHelp. For anyone out there who needs to hear this, you are more than your job. Don't get us wrong. Passion for your work is great, but it's so important to find joy, fulfillment, and validation in your life as a whole, not just at work. And therapy can help you get there. We all go through ups and downs in our career. Maybe you're thinking about switching career paths, or you're feeling super burned out in your job. You might be struggling with the uncertainty of our current economy, or trying to manage the anxiety that can come up during the job interview process. Whatever it is, you're not alone, and therapy can help. Therapy gives you a place to talk through what's going on at work in a safe and supportive environment, figure out what goals you have for your life and career, and build the confidence to go out and make them happen. Otherwise, it's easy to stick with the same old, even if it's not making you happy. If you're interested in giving therapy a try, BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a flexible week-to-week schedule so you can fit it into your day. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get started, then BetterHelp will match you with a licensed therapist based on your needs, preferences, and goals. Connect with your therapist by text, phone, or video call. Start the process in minutes and switch therapists anytime. Elevate your work and your life with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/teamblind for 20% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/teamblind for 20% off your first month.
Well, speaking of AI again,
yeah.
In terms of yourself and your team,
sure.
Any big changes you're doing to recruit? Because what do you say? You have 400,000 people working there, so there's always going to be thousands of people who you're trying to recruit. You know, old school, getting on the phone, that's what I, you know, was always doing.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard to leverage that. So is there anything interesting or, you know, that you're doing there?
Yes. The answer is yes. And I think the two biggest things I would say in that space is, one, for my team, for my recruitment team, what I'm trying desperately to do is take some of those, you know, you always hear like, oh, my God, the robots are coming for our jobs. No, they're not. They're coming for tasks. And 99 times out of 100 is tasks that they don't want to do anyway. So I spend a lot of time thinking how I could make the blocking and tackling, the kind of the grudge work of your average recruiter minimalized, or having that automated so that they can spend more time doing what you're saying, Jack, picking up the phone or being, you know, being with people, because that's really important. That's number one. And we're doing a lot of stuff in that space. On the candidate side, I'm spending a lot of my time right now trying to figure out how we best bring to bear what I call it's AI in sourcing. Right. So rather than screening out, I'm looking to screen in, if you will, or to unearth candidates that are already known to us, what I call candidate rediscovery. I hired last year 110,000 people. In hiring those 100-some-odd thousand people, we get 5 million applicants. There's some subset of them that were just throwing resumes into the ether just to see what stick. But there's a good portion of them that, even though they didn't get hired, they would be a great future hire of the firm. So how do I use AI? So AI and sourcing could say, if I feed in a new job description, rather than having my recruiter have to go out and find someone new, it's like, how many of those 5 million people that applied last year that didn't get the job already have skills that match what I'm looking for? And so being able to do that and being proactive and reaching out to candidates that are somewhere in our ecosystem, so either they applied before, they might be alumni of the firm that left and are looking to come back. They may be people who have opted in to our talent community, say, I want to stay in touch. And if something cool comes up in sustainability tech, let me know. That's what I want to be able to do, is make that connection faster, as opposed to, how do I screen out the wrong people? I'm like, no. How do I bring the right people to the fore? Because the other thing that does is it also makes it a fair and equitable hiring process. If you think back to like early days, a lot of campus hiring was like, if you were lucky enough to have a company come on your campus. When you have this digital environment, I can find people no matter what their background is. Even if they're not even college educated, if they have the skills I need, let's rediscover those folks and match them up with the openings we have. And man, wouldn't that be a great way to fill roles, to find people that already have the skills, have them come right in the front of your inbox as a recruiter or your summary screen, and just outreach that way. Much, much more convenient, but also much more equitable and successful.
Now, I'm curious. I'm seeing a connection to your own personal history where your recruiter actually recognized the skills and said, hey, you know, I'm almost going to voluntold you to kind of take on this new function, this assignment. Right. Do you have something similar to kind of job match your existing employees in the same way, maybe a bit more automated or at scale of what your recruiter, what your mentor did for you?
Oh my God. It's like, attention listener, this was not a paid comment that Dan asked. Like, so yes, I'm really glad you asked. So we have built out an internal ecosystem called My Career Hub. So it's for all internal EY employees where they can, every employee, I've done mine already. You go in, you complete a profile. Okay. And that profile, by the way, when I say you complete it, you can import a resume, a LinkedIn profile. It will pull in jobs you've done at EY, engagements you've been on, learning that you've taken at EY, and that pulls it all into one place to say, this is what Dan can do. This is what he has done. This is what he's capable of doing. This is his skill set. And what we're going to use, we're going to take that ecosystem and kind of the next iteration of this is, if a new job comes up, a new assignment, we win a new client, and we say, boy, for this assignment, we need someone that has these five things. It can then surface people that have those skills, because how it happened to me, Rick, you're absolutely right. You know, the recruiter, like, I remember Dan, he's an outgoing guy. He could be a recruiter, but we don't want to make that, you know, now we have to kind of institutionalize that. How do we really recognize those skills that you wouldn't really think someone might have, or you wouldn't know? How do you bring those to the fore and do it systemically, equitably, and at scale, right? Because like I said, we have 400,000 people. So we're on that road right now of populating all of those profiles so that when it comes to either someone's next assignment or the next learning that they want to take or the experience they want to have, we have a starting point to say, here's what they already do. Here's what they're interested in. Here's what they're capable of. Let's use that as the starting point instead of what it used to be. Just like, who do you happen to know? Which worked in a smaller organization is never going to work going forward. I would, you know, say that to all big employers. You got to find a way to unearth that talent and what people are interested in, or you'll never be able to retain all the people you need.
Now, how about for yourself? No. What's the next step? Like, you're running talent acquisition. I don't mean to get too forward.
Yeah.
Is there kind of a next level that you go up? How does that work?
We used to joke around. So before I was running global recruitment for the firm, I was doing the Americas. Before that, I was doing the US. Before that, I was doing New York. So it just seemed like there was that, you know, that kind of progression. And so I finally went into my boss. I said, unless we start colonizing planets. Yeah. I don't want to be the intergalactic head of recruiting at EY. I think, you know, this is kind of the last stop on the train. So it's actually a really timely question, Jack. I've been having those discussions about what could be next for me. Again, another reason why I've been here for so long. My boss said, hey, what is it you want to do next? What do you want to do more of? What do you want to do less of? What does the next great thing look like for you at EY? And is it at EY? I think for me, it will likely be something more broadly across talent. So right now I look after recruiting people in, but a lot of what I've been able to do there and what my team has been amazing in accomplishing, I think we could bring to bear on other parts of talent, like award and in learning. And couldn't we have those functions joined up in a different way, in a better way, to bring the employee experience to life in a better way? The same way that like my team today brings the candidate experience to life. It's, you know, it's talent strategy. It's, you know, bridging across functions. But we're in discussions right now.
Are you really?
Absolutely. Oh yeah. Like, this is in real time, regardless of when this podcast airs. We are in discussions. Because,
all right. So let's figure this out. All right, if you don't mind, the three of us will brainstorm.
Yeah.
So, what kind of skills do you have that you feel like, gosh, I would love to do such and such? Is there anything that jumps out at you that you're like, oh my God, this would be fantastic?
So, So this is good. I love this question because it's gonna allow me to say something to your listeners that I love saying to anyone who will listen, and even people who won't, like my kids, which is, people talk about purpose and they kind of bandy that word around. I think it's been like overused and, you know, find your purpose, et cetera. But at the end of the day, the way I talk to my kids about it, I'm like, what is it that makes you want to jump out of bed in the morning and go out and do something? Like, what is it that like that really gets you going? Or if at the end of the day, you're exhausted, but it's the best exhausted, like, oh man, that was a great day. And when I talk to candidates about that, you know, they'll say things like, well, it's when I got to spend time with other people, or it's when I, you know, was able to solve a really hard problem. Like, those are the kinds of things that really get me going. So when I think about my own career trajectory and my own purpose, I love helping people. I just love it. I always have since I was a little kid. You know, I do a lot of volunteer work. I'm a volunteer firefighter in my town. You know, I work with youth sports teams and the other things. And so for me, it's like, is there a way that I could use these 30 years worth of connections at EY to help make people's experience at the firm better? How could I help them? That certainly comes to mind. The interesting thing, Jack, is that there may not be a job title that exists with that, but how do I find something that allows me to do more of that? You know, helping people find what they're great at and helping them work through, you know, challenges, career challenges and the like. So whatever I do, it will involve that, number one. But then number two, I think there's a lot of crossover between knowing the firm and kind of selling the firm to people who don't know the firm. There's something to be said for reinvigorating or reselling. Hey, here's why you joined. And if you're not having that experience that you thought you're going to get, let's figure out why. And then let's work through getting you more of those things that will, you know, light that fire within you again. I guess an evangelist, I really do believe in EY, and our values have stood the test of time for me for 3 decades. How do I help the rest of the organization feel reconnected to that, to the extent that they might have lost some of that connection over the years? So when you think about your own organization, the company that you work with, the people you're around, like, what is it about that experience for you? Are you excited about it? Is it something? And for me, this is getting back to what you were just saying. I am excited about it, and I want to get that further out there. So any next move for me is going to, by default, need to include the ability for me to continue to, in a meaningful way, talk about why I think the profession is underappreciated, why EY is such a great place to work. And I don't want to be just the, you know, kind of a mouthpiece or a talking head. I want to live it and help the people here to improve their, you know, whatever it is that they're looking to do with their careers. But I certainly do want to make that, get that more out in the ether about who we are. I think there's so much negativity these days for good reason, right? I mean, you know, economy and war and you name it, right? Pandemic, to remind people that there are good things that you can do that will be both rewarding and expose you to some really great people. I think we need a good dose of that now more than ever, personally.
100%. Could agree more. Could agree. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why we do this.
Yeah.
To help people say that's exactly it. I try to take a different, you know, approach and try to find something positive. And that's what Rick does on his platform as well.
Yeah.
It's kind of kindred spirits here.
I do love that work, though. I mean, Rick, I ask you, like, I mean, I think that's like God's work doing that kind of stuff. Do you find that way? Is it uplifting for you?
It is. I think the big thing that folks don't realize is, you know, they look at my role and they're like, well, you're the PR guy. You're just the spokesperson for the company.
Yeah.
But what's really interesting about Blind is a communications tool. We're actually a social media app, right? And so part of my job is actually helping unearth or kind of doing some treasure hunting, similar to your role in terms of the people that you've already hired. We have that talent already.
Yeah.
And it's more about just kind of, how do I give them the layups and how do I give them the assists that they can get up to bat and, you know, they can really just knock it out of the park.
That's right.
And so it's about shining a light on that stories, helping uplift them to eventually get to that potential.
Yeah.
I think people don't recognize or realize.
I agree. So to that point, Rick, I would say yes and take a step further. That's active sponsorship, not mentoring, you know, but sponsoring someone to give them that seat at the table. I was just on a great call with a bunch of my colleagues last week about this. You got to be deliberate about that. And it's amazing what some of the things, some of the access I can provide to some people, what a little thing that is for me and what a huge impact that can make for people. But again, it's got to be in your diary. Like you got to plan for, you got to do it. You got to be active about it. This like, oh, well, let's just like naturally see what happens if we happen to be walking by the same water cooler. No, no, no. You have to make it specific. I agree.
One last thing, because
sure,
I kind of want to kind of selfishly take advantage of this opportunity. You're having these ongoing conversations, even at your level. It seems like at EY, no matter who you are, what you're doing, what function you are, there seems to be continuous care in terms of what you want to do next or professional development. Can you kind of give us a bit more of a window? You mentioned that after someone is recruited, they get handed off and they get assigned and found a mentor, a sponsor.
Yeah.
What does that look like? How have you been able to do that at scale for so long?
Yeah, it's a great question. And the answer is it's not easy, it's worth the investment and the time, right? So I'd say it's really two broad categories. Number one is we build in mechanisms so that everybody has an opportunity to at least have the entrance ramp onto the highway, right? So things like everybody gets a peer mentor, everybody has a counselor, everyone gets their own. They have a learning plan that says, hey, if you're in this role at this stage, you should probably think about taking these courses, right? So that's given across the board. But then what happens is we start encouraging other ways to make those connections, to have more of those meaningful career conversations. And we do that by saying, hey, you want to have another mentor, you have someone else in another area you're interested in, here's how it's best to connect with them, right? So we create that open space for people to go out and seek. Two of my very best mentors are people that I worked for. They weren't assigned to me, but I worked for, and I specifically said, I need to be around you a lot. I need to ask you things. I need you to help guide me. One of them to this day is some of my very best friends. Our kids are best friends. Like we just like grew together over the course of our career at EY. And she's phenomenal. But so creating the space to do that again, that means spending time and effort and money. And some corporates are like, well, that's kind of soft stuff. I'm like, it's not really soft if you do it right. So I think between the mechanisms you create that everyone has access to, and then the encouragement of those kind of other one-off, because everyone likes to connect and be developed in different ways, right? With their personal preferences and social styles, totally fine. I don't want you to be without at least the foundation, but then from there, how do we help you find the best way to look at career paths? The only thing I would say is that I'm really, really proud of something that EY did, which was, I alluded to it earlier, our performance management process used to be about a look back at your performance and a look forward of what your next assignments were, but it never was deliberately looking after, hey, let's take a full step back and look about your bigger career aspirations. The process today and for the last decade or so has been like, no, we at least one of those conversations with your counselor to be like, forget about the job you were just on or the next job you're going to be on. How's your career going? Are you hitting milestones that you want to do? What else, what other kind of exposure would you be interested in? So that as those things come up, we've already had, laid some of that groundwork. And even just adding that to your performance evaluation process, even that one step could be huge, a huge step in the right direction.
That makes a lot of sense. So it seems like executives like yourself, leaders, mentors have invested so much in these processes and these frameworks so that, no one could get left behind.
Right.
And I appreciate you in that vein for taking us on that journey into your career and EY as a top employer in terms of what our listeners might want to get into.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on the show, Dan.
It's been my pleasure.
That's it for The Blind Ambition. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.